We're walking through the security and this and that, and people are just staring. I can feel them staring, even though I can't see them.
Yeah, the whole scheme of things, and if you look at that sort of time frame from a point of view of when you're born to when you die, that's only a very, very, very small part, you know, or time of your life.
Thanks for tuning in. This has been Hermit Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm your host, Cameron. This is Hermit Radio, and we're doing episode 2 of our In the Presence of Peace series, and we're going to be talking about one of my all-time favorite teachers, Ram Dass. Ram Dass was a man way ahead of his time. Definitely not without controversy. He was in a time where the Vietnam War was raging, the hippie movement was kind of flourishing, and he was one of the people leading the hippie, quote-unquote, movement, and it all started with him, I'm going to talk about a couple books, and I'm going to talk about his movie, and I didn't find out about Ram Dass until probably a year ago, and sadly, that's also literally just after he passed away, which is so sad. His whole life was spent educating people, teaching people, healing people, and just an all-around, guru in every sense of the word. And I want to talk about his life specifically in his books and his movie, but let's talk about his story first. So he ended up being a Harvard professor in psychology, okay? And then he had, he'd always been exploring the mind and trying to understand it. And then he tried psilocybin or mushrooms, and he tried that one experience, and it changed his life forever. It opened up, and if you've had these experiences or done these substances, then you know what happens. You know how it changes the way that you see things. It changed his life forever. And unfortunately, because of these changes, that ultimately got him into leaving Harvard to pursue other avenues, because it was very taboo at the time to be doing it. Because once he started experimenting with mushrooms, it eventually just exploded into pretty much every chemical substance that he could get his hands on to try, with the whole point of not just doing drugs to get high, but using them as a gateway to the divine, to understanding how our minds work, and what makes us really tick at their peak. So those tests and those things that he always did, it got him out of the door of Harvard. But what it allowed him to do is have other opportunities to explore, learn, and teach outside of the academia world. One of the most interesting and amazing experiences that he had, which is covered in all of his books and in the movie, is that he goes to India in pursuit of a guru. He goes to India because he wants to learn more about the culture, and he wants to learn more about Hinduism. And there, deep in India, in the Himalayas, there are gurus there that have been there with ancient knowledge for thousands and thousands of years. And this is what he was after. So he goes to India. He kind of leaves everything in America behind in pursuit of this journey. And one story that comes from his books that it really touched my heart the first time I read it was, he talks about right before he met his guru, he remembers being outside looking at the stars and thinking about his mother. His mother was very ill, and I can't remember if she had just passed away or if she was in the process of passing away, but she was very, very ill. And he said that he distinctly recalls thinking about that experience and looking up the stars, and it was only him. He never had this conversation with anyone else. It was just him and him alone. Then, on his journey, he was taken to a temple with some other people, some other Westerners, to meet a man by the name of Maharaji. And this man was said to be, you know, a wise guru, a very noble, honest, and loving person. So this is exactly what Ram Dass was looking for. And so when upon his arrival to meet this person, he noticed the very odd behavior that his disciples had for him, which is commonplace in their tradition beliefs, especially around gurus and disciples. And he noticed that these disciples were down on their hands and feet trying to touch Maharaji's feet. And he couldn't understand that. And he even says in his books, you know, I wasn't going to be the one to touch his feet or to do anything like that. He was very skeptical of the whole thing. You know, he thought it was a kind of a sham or a fraud. He look at this guy and, you know, what's he doing? Why is he so special? And then the most amazing thing happened. When Ram Dass was finally able to speak to Maharaji, Maharaji spoke to him about his mother. And more specifically, about the night previous when he was looking up at the stars. Maharaji knew things that only Ram Dass knew, that had never been said to anyone else, that had never even been conceived. Literally on their first meeting, Maharaji was telling Ram Dass about his own personal thoughts. And this single event was more impactful, more mind-shattering than any of the drugs or any of the experiments that Ram Dass had done on himself. And in that moment, he said, all I wanted to do was drop to my hands and feet and touch Maharaji's feet. Because of the unexplainable way that Maharaji was able to be inside his head and know exactly what he was thinking. To see the most painful parts of his life and give it back to him. To have that happen. I mean, could you imagine somebody telling you your own thoughts, something that nobody else could possibly know? That's crazy, right? I mean, but it's also so beautiful. And that was the kind of person that this Maharaji was. But from that moment on, Ram Dass became a disciple of Maharaji. Maharaji immediately noticed something beautiful in Ram Dass, and he treated him just a little differently than all of his other disciples. Most of the time, it was actually ignoring Ram Dass, actually not even talking to him, only giving him seconds with him alone to actually speak to him. And Ram Dass would always ask questions like, Maharaji, how do I attain enlightenment? And Maharaji would always say, love people and feed them. So, of course, this answer was not, you know, not necessarily acceptable by Ram Dass. So he would change the way that he would say it, you know. Maharaji, how do I get to where you are? How do I become what you are? Maharaji would say, love everyone and feed people. And so after a while, this kind of would get on Ram Dass's nerves, and he struggled with these concepts only at first. And he had spent several months at the temple. He had spent several months learning. And this is another mind-blowing experience. Ram Dass talks about being able to leave the temple for the first time to go down to, I think, a government office to either make a phone call or send some mail. But he gets to stop at a restaurant to eat something. And at this time, he's wearing holy clothes. In the Hindu and, you know, in India, in their culture, in their beliefs, the clothes he was wearing were a representative of somebody that was holy. And of course, him being a white, you know, tall man, in India, this was very uncommon. This is not commonplace. They don't see that very often. So, you know, he goes to the restaurant and they treated him with lots of respect and brought him lots of food. But then, you know, Ram Dass became kind of self-conscious of this and, you know, was eating his food. He was trying to pretend and play a role of this holy person and, you know, only eating some of the food, only the food that was purest for his body. But there were cookies on the table that he really wanted to eat. He had said, you know, I'd been in the temple for months and I hadn't had anything like that. And I really wanted these cookies. So he said, I waited till they weren't really paying attention. I slid the cookies into my bag, into my carrying bag. And he said, once he finished his meal, as soon as he left the building, he went into the alleyway and he shoved the cookies in his mouth and he ate them. Feeling satisfied and getting his business taken care of, he gets back to the temple, and upon seeing Maharaji, Maharaji leans in and looks at him and says, how are the cookies? And again, Ram Dass explains how Maharaji blew his rational mind. only for the sake and purpose of showing Ram Dass where he wasn't, showing him how much he really didn't know about the universe and about what was actually happening in this material world that we're living in. And these experiences are so beautiful to me because I've had a few in my own way. I've had a few experiences like this that I can't explain that are so beautiful and that I'm touched by them. And I'll give you an example. This is not to toot my horn or anything, but it's merely to show you that these experiences do happen in life and that they're so bizarre, but yet so beautiful. So at my work, I'm actually getting ready to finish up my shift, probably about 20 minutes away from being done. And I notice a gentleman about to walk in the door, and he's looking at me from a distance like he's known me his whole life. Like we're brothers, in fact, making complete eye contact with me, smiling, even kind of giving like a little wave. I don't know this person. I've never seen them before in my entire life. He comes up to me and he starts to speak in kind of half English, half Spanish. It was very difficult for me to understand what he was saying because it was very much half and half. So I could understand the words in English he was saying, but I don't know a lot in Spanish, so it was very difficult for me to dissect what he was saying. Nonetheless, you know, I noticed that there was something going on. This, because again, these things happen to me in my life all the time now, which it's strange, but I've just come to accept them for what they are. But this man starts talking to me, and I really am not able to understand what he says, but I'm just there, and I'm just allowing him to talk. And that's all he's doing. And for like 20 minutes, he's just straight talking to me. And I'm listening and I'm trying to be kind and I'm trying to be patient. Even though my shift is coming to an end, you know, he just keeps talking and talking and talking. And, you know, I could feel that he was like distressed or that he had something on his heart. And so I just was listening. He didn't really ask me for anything. You know, from what I could attain, it sounded like he might have been trying to get some money for a bus ticket. But I told him, I was like, I don't have any money. I don't have any cash on me. I can't give you any money for a bus ticket. And he was just kind of telling me about his whole life situation, you know, what he had been doing. He was wearing some pretty beat up clothes. So, you know, it's not, I'm not trying to be judgmental. You know, he could have been homeless. I don't know for sure. But it seemed that that was the case. And just based on his appearance and the story that I was getting from him, and, you know, I felt bad that I didn't have any cash. If I had, I would have given it to him. But what I offered instead was some food. You know, I had some food and I had some things that I was going to give him. And I asked him, I was like, would you like this? And he said, yeah, sure. So I bring him the food and I bring him a cup of water and he starts to eat it. But then he proceeds to talk to me for another 10 minutes. I'm now 10 minutes past my shift, like being off the clock. And he's still talking to me and still going and going, but still talking to me in the loving, kindful way that he had when he began the conversation, talking to me as if I was his brother. And I just sat and I listened and I was patient and I was kind of was listening and listening and listening. And then, at you know, he finally got to a point where he kind of slowed down and I said, all right, well, you know, it's time for me to go. My shift is over. I'm going to go ahead and head out now. And then in perfect English, he said, yeah, it's about time for me to get up and get going too. Thanks for sitting, man. Just like that. And then got up and walked out the front door. And he didn't even take the food that like I had brought out to him. It was such a mind-blowing experience for me. Like, you know, and things like this continue to happen to me as life goes on. And I just wonder sometimes, like, what was the point of that? You know, because I believe everything happens for a reason. You know, if you're listening to this and you don't believe that, you might be thinking, well, it was just some crazy dude coming to talk to you and blah, blah, blah. You know, sure, maybe so. But I choose to see things differently. I choose to see them from an experience of us all being the same and coming from the same place. And that everybody is divine and we're all a piece of the one source that is divine. And I believe that. And so in a way, it felt like it was the divine talking to me. Maybe it was a test. How patient can you be? How patient can you be with this man that's talking to you and you can't really understand what he's saying? And he's just there. Maybe he just needed my time. And I was more than happy to give it to him. So anyways, I just wanted to share that story with you. I have not had a guru in my life that has had, you know, given me these mind-blowing experiences, but really the world has been my guru and these experiences have been these teachings and these mind-blowing experiences for me. But moving forward, so now, you know, Ram Dass has been with Maharaji for a while and it's time for him to go back to the West. he goes back to the West and he writes a book about him and he does all these things. And then after a while, he wants to come back to India. He needs to come back and go back to his guru, Maharaji, and he needs to learn more because he's feeling overwhelmed in America. He's feeling like he doesn't really know his place or what's going on. But this time he comes back and there's more Westerners because of the book that Ram Dass wrote. More people were interested in Maharaji and wanted to get his teaching. So a lot of people from the West were coming to India to come seek out Maharaji. And that was the experience Ram Dass found himself in, was being around a bunch of other people that only knew about Maharaji because of his book. And he was starting to feel jealous. And he was starting to become frustrated with all the people around him because he was still getting the same kind of pushback from Maharaji, where he would only allow him to see him for, you know, 30 seconds. And any question he asked, he was always met with the same answer, which is love everyone and tell the truth. Love everyone and feed them. These simple things, and they were just not satisfying enough to Ram Dass, and he was starting to grow frustrated, right? And he talks about a time where he says, okay, well, he said, you know, Maharaji tells me to tell the truth and to love everyone, but the truth is, I don't love everyone. As a matter of fact, I am more angry at these people than I actually love them. So Ram Dass took the approach of just telling people the truth instead of actually doing what he was told and loving everyone. He just decided to tell the truth because that's what he was actually capable of doing. And he was so honest with people that he'd be like, get out of my room. I can't stand you. You're so fake. You're so loving. Get out of my room. And that's how he would start talking to people, which led to a confrontation. They were all in a room eating with Maharaji. And one of the disciples brought Ram Dass a plate of food. After a long day, Ram Dass had a long day. He missed his bus. It took him hours to get back to the temple. And on the walk, all Ram Dass did was think about how he was missing time with Maharaji and how these other people were soaking up his energy and learning from him when he was the reason that they were there to begin with. So all this hate and anger buildup was happening inside Ram Dass. And if you're listening, if you've been listening to my podcast, you already know where this is probably going to go and where the teaching lies in this message. So Ram Dass gets back. He's had a long day. They're already finishing up mealtime, and a disciple brings Ram Dass a leaf plate of food, and he smacks it. He smacks it right out of his hand. He says, just get out of my face. I can't stand any of you. And Maharaji calls him over, and, you know, I recommend you watch the movie, and we'll talk about the movie, but the movie does a really funny way of talking about this story. Maharaji calls Ram Dass over and says, what's wrong? What's troubling you? And Ram Dass says, listen, you've told me to love everyone and to tell the truth, but the truth is, I don't love everyone. And Maharaji leans in and looks him deep in the eyes. Gets right in front of his face, looks deep in his eyes, and he says, Ram Dass, love everyone and tell the truth. And Ram Dass explains that in this moment, he realized what Maharaji had been saying this whole time. If you want to get to where I am, if you want to be like me, you have to love everyone and tell the truth. And with that realization, he turned around and he saw everyone in a totally different perspective. His mindset and his heart had changed, and he just started to weep because he'd realized that the answer that he was looking for was right in front of him the whole time. Love everyone and tell the truth. And this is the point. This is what we've talked about on this podcast so many times, is that, you know, who else says this? Jesus, right? Jesus says to love everyone. And if somebody wrongs you, you turn the other cheek. And if you're listening to this and that's a hard concept for you to grasp, I get it. You know, it's hard for me, especially right now. Right now, it's difficult to love everyone. But isn't that the point? Because the minute that you can do that, the minute that you can actually love everyone for who they are, and why would you love everyone? Because you realize that they are all just like you. Everyone on this planet is suffering and trying to find ways to overcome suffering, to get out of the mess that we've dug ourselves into in this material existence. And if you could sit back and realize how truly the same we really are, that we are all part of the divine entity or source or whatever you want to call it, God, we're all a part of God. It's in everything. It's in the trees. It's in the rocks. It's in the dirt. It's in the grass. It's in you and it's in me. If you recognize that part of people, that is how you truly learn to love everyone. And it becomes easy to forgive them of their mistakes because you realize that you are capable of mistakes too, just as I am capable of mistakes. The difference is that I do whatever I can to learn from them to not make them again. I want to be better. I want to be somebody that people can look to as an example of what the right thing is or what the light looks like, right? My coined phrase being a lighthouse. It's not easy. It's probably the hardest thing that you can do. And look at all the traditions around the world that we've talked about. In Zen, they call it the way. The Lakota that we've talked about, walking the red road. There's a reason why they all have a way of living their lives. And it's a spiritual way of living. They all have it. They all express it. And it's to our very core that we are to learn how to do this. And could you imagine, I've said so many times, could you imagine what the world would be like if more of us cared about living that way than the new iPhone or which political party we're attached to? I was talking about this on another podcast, and it brings me back to all of this, right? What we're experiencing in 2020 right now. You need to learn to forgive people. It doesn't matter if they're Republican, if they're Democrat. It doesn't matter what color their skin is. It doesn't matter what their sexual orientation is. You need to learn to let go of that. Because let me tell you something. Whatever it is you hate in someone else is really a reflection of you. You can't sit here and try to tell me that you love everyone but not this group of people. You can't be high and mighty on your horse and say that you're perfect when in reality you're not, because no one is. Neither am I. I do my very best, and there's times when I fail, but I recognize it and I make steps to fix it. But think about this in your life. Where in your life are you saying, I love all these people, but maybe not them? And if you are experiencing that, then that is exactly how far away you are from enlightenment, from true spiritual awakening. Whatever you have left in you that is hateful, that is exactly how far away you are from finding peace. That's what all of these stories are all about. That's what all of these teachers are trying to tell you. That's what this entire podcast has been, is to show you what you still need to do to find the peace you're looking for. But we're going to move on. Just a little note there for you. We're going to move on. So now let's talk about his books. So the biggest one is Be Here Now. It's a huge book, and it's very interesting. I would say probably at least a third, maybe more. A third of it is drawings and writings from him when he was taking acid, when he was doing acid trips. Or maybe even sometimes mushroom trips. So they're very, it's very much an artistic thing in this book. And it's not what you would expect. And I'll tell you, the funniest thing ever was the lesson that you get from this book right off the get-go. So I ordered this book after learning who Ram Dass was and really starting to get into his teachings. I ordered this book, Be Here Now. And I had an idea in my mind of what this book was, and I was so excited to get it and so excited to read it. And then when it finally showed up, it was in a shape and form I had never seen any other book. It's very much just a square. And then, like I said, a good chunk of the middle, maybe even more than a third, it's a good part of it, are these brown sketch-like drawings and writings that look like a lunatic. Look like a lunatic was drawing them and writing them. But there's so much peace and beauty in them. But my take from the book, right from its appearance, was a little bit off for me. I was like, what? What is this? What did I just order? And because, again, this is hilarious, because if you think about this, right? My judgment of the book before I even started to read it was skewed because of its appearance. And that right there was a lesson for me to learn before I even read the book. That is the most mind-blowing and fascinating thing about the whole thing altogether. Ram Dass literally had me learning about myself before I even cracked the book open to take a look at it. And if you get the book after listening to this, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. So that was the first one, and that was the one where he talked about Maharaji. And I don't want to ruin all of the experiences that he had with Maharaji, because it really is worth the time to read the books and learn about all these things that happened to him, because they're just absolutely fascinating. And then there's a couple other books. He's written a couple, and I've only read a couple of them, but the other ones I've read were Grist for the Mill. And that one's probably just a shorter, more condensed version of Be Here Now. Be Here Now is almost like an encyclopedia of his life and teachings and all of these things. And Grist from the Mill is more about like the direct teachings that he's trying to give people, with a handful of the experiences and stories that he shared in Be Here Now. But it's an excellent book. And if you're not trying to read the entire mammoth-sized book of Be Here Now, I recommend Grist for the Mill. And then another one I've read is Polishing the Mirror, A Guide for Spiritual Awakening. That's another good one. And that one was written later in his life when he was a little bit older. And so he references dying more. And that was one of the things that Ram Dass did in his time, is he spent a lot of time with people who were dying, cancer patients, AIDS patients. And, you know, he brought them comfort, helped them understand what the process of dying was really about, and that to not be afraid. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. And then one of the best things is the movie that just came out probably about a year ago, which is Becoming Nobody. The movie is so beautifully done, and it's a combination of kind of like clips from his lectures that he did, and then an interview between him and somebody else, and them kind of talking about those experiences, what life is, and kind of navigating what all of this is really about. But I recommend it. It's on Amazon, Becoming Nobody. Super great movie, documentary. So Ram Dass, such a beautiful man. During his time, if you want to do something interesting, I recommend going on YouTube and just typing in Ram Dass lectures and listening to some of the lectures, because they're so good. They're so well done, and you can really get a sense for who he is as a person, and the teachings themselves are excellent. And one of the best stories from his lectures that I just absolutely fell in love with was, he was talking about, and I don't know the name of the lecture, because there's so many of them, but if you go out and listen to him, you'll probably recognize it once I say it and you remember it. But he was talking about a story, right? And the story is more or less about patience and love. And he talks about a story about a judo master, right? A man who had been training his whole life for judo and learning about, you know, the martial art. And he was very, very good at it. Well, he talks about this man being on the street one day, walking down the street. And then a commotion happens. And this very big and angry, violent man starts kind of throwing things around. He's got a liquor bottle in his hand, so it's clear that he's drunk. He starts chasing after this old couple, and he shoves down this old man. He starts chasing after his elderly wife. And he looks like he's about to physically hurt him. So the judo master jumps into action, right? This is the moment he's been waiting for his whole life. He learned how to do these martial arts just for this moment. But the thing about judo is that judo is not about looking for a fight, right? It's more about defense. It's more about learning how to be one with yourself as the martial art, and then learning how to defend yourself or defend others who might need it, right? So this dude wasn't looking for a fight, but there's a fight now and it's presenting itself. And so he's getting excited, because he's now going to get to use these skills that he's been training for his whole life. So he walks up to the big angry man. He's like, "Why don't you pick on somebody your own size?" And he gets in his stance and he's getting ready to fight. The big angry man that's drunk is coming after him. And then from out of nowhere, another little man comes from behind a tea shop, and he walks up and he steps in front, steps in between the judo master and between the drunk man. And he looks up at the big, drunk, angry man, and he says, "Hey, why are you so angry? Why are you trying to fight people? Like, why are you causing harm?" And the big, angry, drunk man is just like, "Get out of my way, old man. You don't know what you're doing. I'll hurt you." And he goes, you know, I can see that, you know, you're so angry, but it seems to me that you must be in a lot of pain. He's like, come, sit. And he walks over to a bench and he puts his hand down and he pats the seat next to him. He says, come sit with me. And almost like a miracle, the big, angry, drunk man kind of lets his guard down. And he does. He walks over and he sits down. And then the old man sits next to him. He says, tell me why you're so angry. Tell me why you're so ready to hurt people. And the big angry man kind of just slumps down and he says, my wife died a week ago. And he starts to sob a little bit. And then the little old man says, yeah, that sounds pretty tough. That's a hard life. And then the big angry man, he just starts sobbing more. And he says, yes, I miss my wife. And the little man just says, well, you know what? I'm here to listen to you. I'm here to be here for you. And everything's going to be okay. And just like that, the big angry man, he let go of his liquor bottle and he started to sob. And the little old man starts to pat him on the back and he just sits with him. He just sits with him. And the judo master was watching all of this happen. And the judo master realized that that old man had just performed true judo because he stopped a fight without using any physical force at all. And that was the true art of judo that he had been practicing his whole life. And there's so many meanings and connotations in this teaching. Because how many of us have been in that position, right? How many of us have outwardly been aggressive or mean to somebody because we're hurting on the inside, right? Almost everybody, especially right now. We're all hurting a little bit. We're all a little scared. We're all a little anxious. Or maybe you're a lot. Maybe you're a lot of angry and you're got a lot of anxiety and a lot of sadness. Which is why it's so important to have people in our lives that are like the little old man who just opened up their ears and listened to somebody who was in pain. And how many times have we been quick to judge people about why they're doing something, right? Everybody in our lives that we know, including ourselves, have experienced suffering in some degree, or loss, or pain. It happens and it comes for all of us. And you don't have to avoid it. You don't have to pretend like it's not happening. So, what I'm saying in this lesson is the next time that you're faced with this situation, right? Somebody's screaming at you, somebody's angry at you, somebody cuts you off in traffic, somebody yells at you on the phone. Have just a little bit of patience. And in that moment, try your hardest to remember this story. Try to think to yourself, what is causing this person so much pain? Why is this person so hurt on the inside that they're outwardly seeking to hurt me? You know, and how many times have you been in a position where you were hurting or suffering and just needed somebody to listen to you? Right? So maybe what you can do is the next time that happens, you can do that for someone else. You can offer your ear or you can offer your shoulder to cry on for somebody else. That takes more courage than being able to fight somebody. You have to be vulnerable and you have to be at peace with yourself before you can do that. But you don't have to do any of those things to start. Just be there. Just be present. Be patient. Be kind. And I guarantee you the other person will appreciate it. Even if they don't accept it or receive it, especially if they don't do it outwardly towards you, on the inside, they do appreciate it. And if they don't, then that's their business. They still have a lot of work to do, clearly. But right now, I mean, couldn't we all agree that that's something that we all need right now? Put all of the things that make us different apart and put them aside. just reach out to people and just let them know that you're there for them, that you care. How many people, you know, had to go through the lockdown by themselves? Must have been hard. Must have been sad. You know, we all know what the right thing to do is. It's not always easy. It's not always convenient, but we know what it is, right? When we see a homeless person on the side of the road and we think about maybe giving them some change or maybe thinking about giving them a meal, but we don't do it because we're too busy. I'm guilty of it too. I try to do the best that I can, but yeah, there's definitely times where I'm too busy and I got to keep going and I got to get to work. You can't, as one person, solve all the world's problems. But what you can do is have compassion and be there when you can. That's enough. And if everybody did that, that would certainly be more than enough. So I hope that that's the one thing you take away from this episode and these lessons from Ram Dass is just be there. Have compassion. And much like the two principles Maharaji told Ram Dass, you know, love everyone and tell the truth. Because there's no reason not to do either of those. But I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be back next week with In the Presence of Peace. I love you guys. Have a nice day. This has been Hermit Radio.